Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. Here is a very interesting little bit of film footage that I got hold of a while back. And to me, this thing will give you some kind of insight into how these elite scum think. In this case, it's Keith Olbermann, and he is pretty wealthy. I think he's worth about $25 million, and he's involved in sports, etc. But just listen to this thing which the liberal media in America refer to as him having a rant. But actually, watch his expressions and listen to what he says. This guy really hates Trump, and the real question is why? Why does he get so worked up and so angry about Trump? And for those who say that Trump is part of a plan, etc., etc., I don't think so. I think that if you listen to this guy, he explains, he tells you why Trump is a threat. Now, I've mentioned before that I think that the Jews hate Trump, even though Trump is surrounded by Jews. But Jewry hates Trump because he draws too many white people. And they can see that he's bringing these whites together. And that's the real reason they hate him. That's my assessment. Now listen to this guy, because out of his own mouth come some interesting things that will show you that I think I'm on the right track here. His rant is 1 minute and 23 seconds long, but listen to it and listen to the points that he makes. Why must Trump be removed? And he calls Trump a terrorist, and he talks about Trump's supporters must be removed from society. This is a all-out culture war. There is something intense at work here. And the big question that's been on my mind for quite some time is, why do these liberals and Jews and elite go so crazy over Trump? What is it about Trump that's the problem? So let me just go through a couple of the things that he says in this video, and then you can listen to it yourself. Now, this video, I spotted it on a website called Real Clear Politics, and it was published on the 9th of October, 2020. So this is almost a month before the election took place. And listen to him say, Trump must go. Oh, he says it in various nice ways. He says, Trump must be expunged. But he says, the Pandora's box that Trump has opened will not be so easily closed. You see, Trump has gone down a number of paths that the mass media and the Jews were hiding and keeping away from people. And Trump has gone and opened up things and said things. And it reached lots of people. And that is one of the things that's really pissing this guy off. And I can't emphasize enough the importance of the fact that Trump has opened up areas of discussion that had been avoided by the mass media and the liberals for decades. For decades, Jews and liberals had been hiding this stuff. And now Trump is talking about all kinds of weird things. He even raised the issue of farm murders in South Africa and whites in South Africa. Things which the mass media didn't want to go back to. Because they've lied about it, they've covered things up, and now here is Trump, and he's starting to open all these little boxes and make people aware of things that the mass media has been quietly hiding. The Jews and the mass media have been quietly hiding this stuff. And now suddenly it gets into the glare of publicity with Trump. And just listen to this guy saying, the terrorist Trump must be defeated, he must be destroyed, he must be devoured at the ballot box. And he's saying this a month before that horribly rigged election. And then listen to him talking about his enablers and his supporters and everybody to do with Trump must be destroyed. And then he goes on about how Kyle Rittenhouse and all these other people need to be prosecuted and removed from society because society has been damaged so much and the world has been damaged so much. And isn't this rather crazy and over the top? You'd think that Trump has nuked half the planet the way this guy rants on and carries on. You'd think that Trump has killed 1 million people. But it's nothing like that at all. The real issue has to do with discussions and ideas. That's what these bastards don't like. Trump has opened too many doors. And I like the way that he says that, you know, the society and the world has been destroyed and we're going to have to try and rebuild it. What he's really saying is, we're going to have to start rolling out all those old lies again. And we're going to have to start fooling the people and fooling them continuously until we can get them calmed down, until they believe the shit that we tell them. But the point is, Trump must have hurt the system. He must have hurt the elite big time. For a guy who's worth $25 million, I mean, $25 million is a serious amount of money, especially for us here in Southern Africa. $25 million that this Keith Olbermann is worth might not be big money in America, but for us here in Southern Africa, that's huge money. Anyway, he's not some normal, middle-of-the-road, average person. He's got some money. He's connected to people in the elite. And listen to him talk, man. You'd think Trump has burned everything down the way he carries on. He is seriously worked up, and he's genuine in what he's saying. And, I mean, he refers to the election and chasing Trump and the maggots. Who are the maggots? The maggots are all these common white people who are supporting Trump. And he's saying, oh, these people must be chased off the stage. This is a war, a culture war inside America. This guy and the other elite are threatened by what Trump is opening up. And it's not just Trump. I think what really freaks them out are what he calls the maggots, which are the common white Americans who support Trump. That's what's really bothering them. And there he is talking about the election and November 3rd, the date of the election, and that the fight only begins that day. America is divided, and this guy represents the Jewish side of America, the wealthy side of America. And what is it that's working him up? My own assessment, which I want to discuss in more detail later, is that what we are looking at is a culture war, and we are looking at what I would call European Aryan nationalist thinking versus Jewish trader thinking. There is a key issue here that is causing this division, and these guys think in very different terms. The elite and the Jews and guys like Olbermann think very differently to those of us whites who think in nationalist terms, racialist terms, let's call it traditional Western terms. There is a big difference in thinking. And that is the key lie that we need to get to. What is the difference between their way of thinking and our way of thinking? And in my view, there is a key lie that guys like this believe, and it's got to do with money and finance and stuff. And it's something that's come in through the Jews.
Trump can be and must be expunged. The hate he has triggered, the Pandora's box he has opened, they will not be so easily destroyed. So, let us brace ourselves. The task is twofold. The terrorist Trump must be defeated, must be destroyed, must be devoured at the ballot box. And then he and his enablers and his supporters and his collaborators and the Mike Lees and the William Barrs and the Sean Hannitys and the Mike Pences and the Rudy Giulianis and the Kyle Rittenhouses and the Amy Coney Barretts must be prosecuted and convicted and removed from our society while we try to rebuild it. And to rebuild the world Trump has nearly destroyed by turning it over to a virus. Remember it, even as we dream of a return to reality and safety and the country for which our forefathers died, that the fight is not just to win an election, but to win it by enough to chase, at least for a moment, Trump and the maggots off the stage, and then try to clean up what they left. Remember it, even though to remember it means remembering that the fight does not end November 3rd, but in many ways will only begin that day.
Now take a look at the following film footage. Again, I want to show you that the elite are out to destroy Trump. They hate him. It's not just this Keith Olbermann. There is a whole plan and scheme of revenge that the rich are going to unleash on Trump. And in here, you will also hear Jews. You'll hear an old Jewish hag talking, and she's going to be talking about some of the legal stuff that's coming Trump's way, etc. They've even gone and grabbed other people in Trump's family. They are creating problems for Trump. When Trump leaves office, they are going to try to destroy Donald Trump. I think they'll even try to bankrupt him. It could be that they might even succeed. Let me tell you, these people are out for revenge on Trump. And the difference between, let's call it elite and upper class revenge versus the revenge of the common man might want to take a gun or might go up to somebody and want to punch him in the face, but this is the revenge of the elite. They've created all kinds of problems and looked for all kinds of weaknesses, and they are out to destroy Donald Trump. When he leaves office, they want to finish him off. They want to make his life a nightmare. And again, I want to tell you, this thing tells me that Trump is not part of their system. Trump might be surrounded by Jews, and Trump might be listening too much to Jews, but deep down, these Jews hate him. The elite hate him. He is a threat to that setup where the Jews and the elite are working together in control of America. Trump is not a part of that thing. Trump has spent a lot of his life among those people, but in the things that he's done in politics, he's moved further and further away from that, and he's become a threat to that system that represents liberalism, and the Jews, and all this multicultural junk, and all that. Trump is a threat to that system. Trump himself might not fully grasp why he's a threat to it, but there is a big problem here, and these people are out to destroy him. I suspect that they will try to also ruin him financially. They want to ruin him reputationally. They want to ruin him financially. They want to do a bunch of things to him. But the war is on. And I'm quite delighted by the events that have occurred. COVID, the election stuff, and now even the banning of Trump from Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and all that. It makes me feel that we've got some action. I'd rather see that we've got action and things that are churning rather than everyone going to sleep and everyone just giving up. I quite like the battle that is brewing here. This could be quite a nasty battle, but I like it and I think it's good and I think it's the greatest thing that the white right can get. But listen to this. You're going to see these scum-sucking pigs. They've been trying to set Trump up. They want to bugger him up. They want to destroy him. And I think this is good stuff. I think it's good stuff. It's grist for the mill. It's good for the white right, good for the movement. It keeps the fight going. And that, to me, is important. Very important. The fight must keep on rolling forward. This is the only way we're going to grow and become stronger. And we need to take on the mass media and the various tools of the elite filth and the Jews, etc. In this video, also look at the names of the people that they're interviewing. You'll see there's what appears to be a Jewish hag named Finkelstein. She does a hell of a lot of talking. And then you'll see there's a guy who seems to have been very close to Trump, if not one of his right-hand men, named Cohen. And Cohen, as one of my friends has said, is always a Jew. He's never yet met a Cohen that's not a Jew. So here's a Cohen who seems to be stabbing his own boss, Trump, in the back. And you'll hear quite a lot from Cohen and especially the hag, Finkelstein. And then there's also a man called Richman. And I've never come across Richman as a name before, as a surname before, but it certainly does sound like a Jewish kind of a name. And he's also talking a lot. So it looks like most of these people, maybe even all of these people in this video excerpt, are Jews. And they're all talking about all the problems that are coming for Trump. And they seem to be driving it. So I think that there is quite an angle going on here. There's quite an agenda here to destroy Trump. And this is what's coming for him after he's left his presidency. And I have wondered if it should be that Trump ends up doing well. Suppose Trump leaves the presidency and he does well. And he has big support for the things that he does. Let's hope that he does some kind of internet stuff and media related or social media related stuff. If Trump were to do well and were to survive despite these problems, I then think that the next step would be for the elite and the Jews to want to kill him. I have come across mention that Trump is extremely afraid of being poisoned through poison being in his food. I don't know where that comes from. I've never been able to source why it is that he's afraid of that. But he apparently has got quite a fear of being poisoned by way of his food. And I think that if they can't destroy Trump in other ways, that we may find in a couple of years' time, maybe one day Trump just drops dead. And then people will say, ah, he died of a heart attack, he died of natural causes, he died of old age. But in fact, it could be murder. And I think that that could be where Trump is going. You see, Trump has made a big issue about this election being stolen. And I did put out a video about that, where he gives his speech round about Christmas 2020 with all the lowdown facts on the election fraud, which match up with what I've come across. And it's like everything he said is dead on. And the fact that he's so firm on this election fraud as a president, I think that if he carries on with this and he carries on making this a big issue, which I think he will, and he gains support, I'm telling you, I think that the possibility of him being killed is something that will be a very real thing that could happen in the years to come. I don't think it'll be immediate, but I think later it can be easily a problem. These people are out to get him, big time, big time. And the fate of America is at stake. And for that reason, to kill him won't be an issue. They will do it if they need to. First, they're going to smear him, try to bankrupt him, try to destroy him through court cases, try to slander him, try to break him. And if all of that doesn't work, then the final thing is to murder him sometime in the years to come. So I think this Trump business could still be a very, very interesting thing, and maybe the most interesting part of the Trump story is about to start when he walks out of the presidency on the 20th of January 2021. That's when the real game will start, and it's going to be ugly. And as you've seen, Keith Olbermann has in fact indicated that the war is on. Whites must just keep going. The movement's got to keep going. We've got to keep fighting. The more there is churning and problems and issues and things coming up, and the more the right-wing media grows and so forth, the bigger the fight is going to be. But more people are going to be drawn into it, and that is the good part. Anyway, here's the video, and you'll see what these Jews and elite have got planned for Trump.
When President Trump leaves office in just 68 days, he'll return to the world of average citizen, a world without special privileges and immunities of the presidency. And while President Trump has often been at the center of numerous lawsuits, tonight we take a closer look at the wave of legal jeopardy that could be on the horizon and why a controversial potential self-pardon might not solve every coming legal test. Here's Devin Dwyer.
Hi, Donald John Trump.
For years, Donald Trump has used the presidency as a legal shield.
The worst presidential harassment in history.
But outside the White House, a new reality awaits.
He's an ordinary citizen. Full stop. I mean, we actually had an entire revolution against the idea of kingly prerogative and the idea that a king is above the law.
No former president has ever been criminally investigated or charged with a crime. But Trump will leave office implicated in multiple active investigations into personal conduct from before the presidency.
There are credible allegations that Donald Trump has engaged in tax fraud, bankruptcy fraud, probate fraud, and that's unprecedented. We've never had an allegation of pre-presidential criminal conduct follow a president after he leaves office.
In New York, Manhattan District Attorney Cyrus Vance is leading a criminal probe into Trump's business practices. While Vance has not spelled out specific allegations of wrongdoing, he's seeking 8 years of Trump's tax returns. Last summer, the U.S. Supreme Court said Trump did not have immunity from subpoenas.
And there's no reason for the president's accounting firm, Mazars, or former accounting firm, to resist those subpoenas anymore.
How critical are those documents? What could they show?
The tax returns would be important, for Cyrus Vance to explore, but probably triangulating those tax returns with other sources of financial information that he's been able to obtain or is still trying to obtain.
Trump is the first president in 40 years to refuse to release his taxes. According to the New York Times, decades of Trump's tax return data it obtained appears to show the billionaire businessman paid no federal income tax in 10 of the last 15 years. And starting in 2010, claimed an income tax refund of $72.9 million, which the Times says is now at the center of an IRS audit.
Actually, I paid tax, but and you'll see that as soon as my tax returns are... It's under audit. They've been under audit for a long time. The IRS does not treat me well.
The Times also reported Trump has more than $300 million in debt coming due in the next 4 years, on top of $100 million tax payment due in 2022, and potentially $100 million more if he loses his refund battle with the IRS.
The amount of money, $400 million, is a peanut.
Trump's financial records are also at the center of a New York State investigation into possible financial fraud, as alleged by former Trump personal attorney Michael Cohen.
It was my experience that Mr. Trump inflated his total assets when it served his purposes, such as trying to be listed amongst the wealthiest people in Forbes, and deflated his assets to reduce his real estate taxes.
New York State Attorney General Letitia James is actively investigating Cohen's claims.
The outcome of the election will have no impact on our investigations, and so we will continue our investigations, again, related to the testimony of Michael Cohen. No one is above the law, and that our investigations have nothing to do with politics, but more to do with the facts.
Their aggressiveness in seeking additional information is indicative of the seriousness with which they're treating the allegations and of their conviction that the investment of resources will prove worthwhile.
Legal experts say Trump will soon likely face new subpoenas for documents and testimony. He last gave a deposition in 2016, just before winning office, in a civil case he brought against a former business partner.
I do.
Well, there simply is no immunization for a former president whatsoever. And we could actually see something we have never seen before in this country, which is the criminal trial of a former president.
And Trump's also facing fallout from allegations of sexual misconduct dating back decades. E. Jean Carroll, a former Elle magazine writer, claims Trump raped her in a Bergdorf Goodman dressing room in the mid-90s. No charges were brought, but after President Trump accused Carroll of lying, she sued for defamation. A federal judge this week said the case can go forward.
I have no idea who this woman is. This is a woman who's also accused other men of things, as you know. It is a totally false accusation.
Suffice it to say that his lawyers will have plenty of action in the coming years, and the criminal side of it may be the least of the concerns.
There's also a new lawsuit from within his own family. Niece Mary Trump filing suit in September, alleging her uncle Donald fraudulently kept her from a financial stake in the family's business. The president has called his niece an opportunistic disgrace.
To be disinherited, to be shut out entirely from the wealth of the family, was to be told quite explicitly that you don't count and you are not loved.
As he enters the post-presidency, Donald Trump facing an unprecedented array of legal challenges. But one big unanswered question, whether the Biden administration will pile on.
I will not interfere with the Justice Department's judgment of whether or not they think they should pursue the prosecution of anyone that they think has violated the law.
I do believe that the Justice Department will be very leery of bringing prosecutions of a former president, especially when the results of the election have been so hotly contested by that former president.
Regardless, President Trump has floated the idea of preemptively pardoning himself.
And yes, I do have an absolute right to pardon myself.
A right not spelled out in the Constitution and never tried before. It also does not apply to state investigations like the criminal probe in New York.
Criminal cases, by and large, move somewhat quicker, and they're the ones that carry with them at least the potential for prison time.
So a pardon from himself or from his vice president would go no distance at all to exonerating him or immunizing him against those state legal proceedings.
Proceedings now gaining steam as Trump's former hometown becomes ground zero for his legal battles in the days ahead. For ABC News Live, I'm Devin Dwyer in Washington.
Our thanks to Devin. Hi, everyone.
In the next video, you're going to see a guy called Rick Wilson, who is part of an organization called the Lincoln Project. Now, let me tell you something. When I look at these election results and the stolen election, and I sit and ponder it from my previous attempts here in Southern Africa to monitor stolen elections in Zimbabwe especially, and South Africa also, I must tell you, as a computer programmer, I think that the election fraud was something big in terms of the number of people involved in this. This thing was big. Lots of people were involved in this, and there were some high-tech people involved in this as well. This was not a small thing. And when I look at this guy, Rick Wilson, from the Lincoln Project, to me, this is the kind of person that we will discover later on was involved in the election fraud. At some point, we're going to discover who planned this election fraud business. We will find out one day, maybe years from now, who planned the election fraud, who executed it, how it was pulled off, etc. And then you're going to find people like this, people somewhat like this Rick Wilson, whites who are intelligent and whites who are dangerous with their views, their anti-white views, their globalist views, etc. You're going to find people rather like this were the brains behind the election fraud. And when I look at this Lincoln Project, I saw that James Carville, now James Carville I remember from the time of Clinton and those shitbags. Now James Carville was a man that I learned to have the utmost contempt for. I regard him as a bag of shit. I can't stand James Carville. I can't stand that disgusting man. Now, James Carville praises the Lincoln Project. He actually says that the Lincoln Project is the most aggressive of the organizations out there pushing the democratic agenda. And the Lincoln Project has managed to gather $78 million for its various campaigns, which include the running of adverts, etc. Now, the Lincoln Project probably is not directly involved in the actual stealing of the election. But I would tell you that I've written this on my website, and I will continue to say this, that the FBI should be visiting the Lincoln Project. The FBI should be visiting guys like Rick Wilson and all the other people, and taking a look at their computers, their emails, who they talk to, etc. Because I'm willing to bet you that even if the Lincoln Project itself is not directly involved in the theft of the election, I will bet you that they know the people involved in the electoral fraud. I bet you that through the Lincoln Project, the FBI can find the actual people who perpetrated the election fraud. I'm absolutely convinced of it. These people are crazy. These people are dangerous. As for this Amanpour woman, I'm so sick of her. I remember her from the past, from CNN, etc. And notice her non-white sidekick. And these people are talking, as if they represent civilization. I tell you, I marvel at this when I listen to fools like these and the way they talk about civilization and society and law and order and truth. Truth and reality. Here is Rick Wilson talking about what is truth and what is reality. These people are such idiots, such punks. They have no clue what they're doing. They don't know what they're talking about. And they, I assure you, would never be able to create civilization. Now they like to pretend that Trump and everybody else, the white right, is breaking down civilization. No, you lying fools. Anyway, the key thing here is listen to this Rick Wilson, and he talks all his liberal claptrap and assorted shit, and then look at what he says about how Donald Trump's life is going to become a burning hell once he leaves office. And the same Lincoln Project, even in recent days, has been behind the whole notion that the Congress must try to impeach Trump, even if they impeach him in just the last final days that he is the president. These people have got a burning, seething hatred for Donald Trump and a burning, seething hatred for anything that's linked to Trump and the whites who are linked to Trump. Interestingly enough, I noticed as I was grabbing this video, I noticed that these same people now say that Trump might be starting a third political party. And maybe it's about time that that happened, because the Republicans and the Democrats are so similar. It's not perfect for whites, but at least if you have something with some kind of energy that can go and fight the system. This is what Ross Perot set out to do in the time of Clinton. I think Trump can take this a lot further, and the situation is different. There are people looking for a leader, and they're willing to follow a leader. But the main thing here is listen to these liberal scum and listen to them talk about how they're going to make Donald Trump's life a burning hell after he leaves office. And again, that will show you liberal thinking in action. It will show you what these people are really up to and how they think. And these people have an absolute hatred for nationalism. Never mind racialism. They already are freaking out at something as mild as a bit of nationalism. And you can imagine how freaked out they will be by racialism. But anyway, this is interesting to watch. Here is yet another enemy. And notice, he's well-funded. $74 million for his filthy project, and they've been aggressively attacking Donald Trump in recent times. So these are the lead attack dogs, and they've got money behind them. This is your enemy, these white liberal shitbags who have bought into globalism, Jewish globalism.
Watching Wednesday's terrifying and illegal invasion of the Capitol, Maryland Governor Larry Hogan mobilized state police and the National Guard, only to be blocked from sending them in for 90 minutes by the federal government. Governor Hogan, a Republican, is now calling for President Trump to resign or be removed from office. Joining calls for the president's impeachment is the Lincoln Project, which is the anti-Trump Republican group that was formed back in 2019. The project's co-founder, Rick Wilson, called the violence sedition and insurrection. And here he is talking to our Hari Srinivasan about what is at stake.
Christiane, thanks. Rick Wilson, you have worked with the Lincoln Project for years now to get to this point where Donald Trump would leave office. And the other day, mm-hmm. when you were watching TV and you saw essentially an insurrection, anything surprise you?
No, sadly, the idea of armed and violent insurrectionists charging the U.S. Capitol, seizing our legislative seat of governance at the direction of the president and the encouragement of his allies in the Senate, particularly in the House, did not shock me. This is a point where we have declined so far from the norms of American exceptionalism and become essentially poised on the verge of the collapse of those norms at the behest of Donald Trump. It doesn't surprise me. You know, I meant it sort of flippantly when the first time I said it 5 years ago, I said everything Trump touches dies, but it has become increasingly evident that everything that he has corrupted and reduced over the last 4 years in our governance has come home to roost. It is a painful lesson that institutions are fragile.
There was a recent Economist YouGov poll that showed even after the attack on the Capitol, about 40%+ of people who say they're Republicans when they answer the survey say, yeah, I'm fine with that. I'm fine with the protesters. I'm fine with Donald Trump. And interestingly, that's almost the same proportion of members of Congress who were voting on January 6th or were intended to vote on January 6th to obstruct the results.
Trumpism is a cultural problem, Hari. Okay. And that culture is defiant of not only reality, but of tradition and of morality. It's a fundamentally unconservative culture. They are not believers in limited government, or the rule of law, or the Constitution. They believe in Trump. And if he says something or does something, that's what they believe. If Donald Trump tomorrow said, I'm in favor of child sacrifice, they would say, well, we got to reconsider child sacrifice, because that is the power he has over them. It is the most astounding diversion from what American politicians have traditionally been. They have traditionally, even powerful, charismatic American politicians, have traditionally still been in response to people. These are people in response to a leader. This is, you know, he is a perfect authoritarian figure in terms of the charisma, the control, the almost religious devotion to him.
How much does the death of Officer Brian Sicknick, I apologize if I'm saying his name wrong, how much does that change this equation?
Well, as you saw immediately on the night it was announced that he had passed, you know, Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley were suddenly appalled and shaken and oh, it was terrible. Actions have consequences. Their actions have consequences. So Marsha Blackburn and Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley and Ron Johnson, they have blood on their hands in this. They were encouraging these people. Ted Cruz over the weekend was out doing a speech on the hood of a car, screaming and waving his fist around, we'll fight back, we'll fight to the last man, etc. Rudy Giuliani's out there saying, let's have trial by combat. Well, the death of a Capitol police officer who, I don't mean to be grisly about this, was beaten to death with a fire extinguisher at the hands of a mob motivated by Donald Trump and his Senate and House allies. They should have a moral responsibility and culpability for this. I pray, in some capacity, the family of this officer is going to pursue their legal remedies against the people that encouraged and caused this. And it's not just the guy that beat him to death. It's the people that pushed him to do that. It's the people that motivated him to do that. I promise you, whoever beat him to death is a frequent Fox viewer and is in a million Facebook groups telling him that everyone's out to get him and that the world is a dark place and Antifa is everywhere and conspiracies are real. And you know, five people died on this day. And it is, the tragedy of it is enhanced by the place it occurred, and the tragedy of it is enhanced by the fact that the rhetoric of the people who supposedly serve the American populace rev those people up into a fever pitch.
Should the people who were speaking and riling these folks up, what charges can or should the Department of Justice bring? I mean,
I'm not an attorney, and I don't pretend to be one. But if a leader in Black Lives Matter was standing on a podium somewhere screaming that we have to charge Capitol Hill and take back our election and take back what's ours, that person would be in jail this minute. They would have been arrested and put in jail immediately. They would have been for conspiracy or what have you. Again, I'm not an attorney, but there is a sense in this country where moral accountability for political actions needs to be restored.
There's also the possibility of impeachment or calling on the 25th Amendment, but given the clock, should these actions be taken even in a symbolic manner, even if they can't be completed?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Look, the cabinet is falling apart right now. So the 25th Amendment is a very long shot. But the 25th Amendment has a four-day clock where if the cabinet, 51% of the cabinet goes in and says, hey, this guy's not capable of fulfilling the duties of president, goes to Congress for after 4 days. They could do it two or three times between now and the end and keep him from the worst excesses. I think that is a vastly remote possibility. There's too many people in the cabinet who are utterly loyal to Donald Trump.
Betsy DeVos, I think he should be impeached. Sorry, go ahead.
She did. Yeah, no, she did. She did. But there are still too many people. And the people they'll replace them with will be junior loyalists of the first, you know, the first water. I think that he should be impeached today. They should expedite the process, take it directly to the floor. There's a methodology by which they skip the committee BS, take it directly to the floor. He should be impeached today. And the reason he should be impeached is that is a moment where it forces the Republicans in the Senate to take an up or down vote on whether or not they think this rhetoric and behavior and the outcomes that they are facing in the chamber in which they will be standing, as it was besmirched and vandalized by Trump supporters, if they think that that is a viable position to have. I'd love to have them on the record doing it. I'd love to have them on the record. They won't, but I'd love to have them on the record.
Given your involvement with the party, I'm sure you've read the long reports after the Republicans lose an election, they go off on a retreat.
I've helped write some of them.
Yeah, that's right. You've helped write some of them. So if they go on another retreat after this, first of all, should they be careful who they invite that is a Republican? And two, what are the revelations that the party needs to come to grips with?
Here's the shocking and terrible thing, Hari. Not one of them gives a damn. They have decided, they made a political calculus that for at least the next 20 years, there are still enough angry white people, angry white dudes, 55 and older, to sustain them in at least a functional party, even though it won't be a national party any longer. They're going to be able to hold on to enough red seats, red districts, and red states to call themselves a party. And they're not interested in expansion. They're not interested in viability. They are interested in the very short term, do I keep my seat? Do I win? And so some of them will try to back away from Trumpism. Some of them will try to run it through the car wash, as I like to say, and pretend it never happened. But a lot of them have embraced it. You don't go back from this. You don't go back if you're Ted Cruz and say suddenly, oh, I'm a constitutional conservative again. This is not a scenario where these guys get to easily undo this or wind back the clock and say, oh, I'm a Reagan Republican. I was Donald who? They don't get to do that.
You've said your three goals for the Lincoln Project were, one, to oust Donald Trump. Then you were going to pursue his enablers, essentially to the far corners of the earth. And then you were going to do everything possible to eliminate Trumpism. How long does that take? And how do you hold people accountable?
Well, you hold people accountable by using the power of media, the power of political action, the power of advocacy, which we've become very strong at. We've become very good at that. We drove three law firms away from the president after the election. We made them quit. We pressured them. We are not constrained by the old Washington rules. None of us are lobbyists. None of us give a damn about whether we're invited to the winter party meeting. None of that stuff matters to us. But we have built an audience. We've built a constituency that is interested in pushing back on the people who have enabled Donald Trump. Now, that is a long road, but 22 and 24 are looming, and we plan to play a role in both of those campaigns. Trumpism is a more complicated problem. And, you know, we came to realize it wasn't merely political fairly early in the process after forming the Lincoln Project. It is a cultural problem. It is a moral problem. It's a civic problem. It's an educational problem. So we're going to have to pursue some other angles into that. We're not really sure where that is yet, but we know that that's a long battle, because if we exist in a country where there are people who believe in authoritarianism, who believe in nationalism and statism, and in that model that Steve Bannon and other folks around Trump have proposed, we think this country is in deep trouble. We don't think it's a survivable philosophy for a governing party in this country to embrace ethno-nationalism and statism and authoritarianism.
So how does Mitch McConnell, how do Lindsey Graham, how are they held accountable? Lindsey Graham survived a rather close election.
He did. And Lindsey lives in a very, very red state, and Mitch McConnell lives in one of the reddest of states. And so it's hard to hold them politically accountable. But what you can do is make their lives painful. What you can do is reduce the size of their majority. What you can do is get them into the minority politically. Because being in the minority isn't being 50% less than being in the majority if you're Mitch McConnell. It's 100% less. You go from unlimited power to almost none. And, you know, he's still got some positional power because of the rules of the Senate, but you reduce their ability to have political impact. You reduce their ability to elect more people. You cause the pain level with their donors and their supporters and the people that lobby them and the corporations that support them. You increase the pain level with those people. So look, right now, if you're a corporate supporter of Josh Hawley, somebody's knocking on your door right now saying, there's a dead cop, in part because Josh Hawley was telling people that he was out there giving the high five and the raised fist to these people that were rioting and invading the Capitol. So, you know, there are ways to hold them accountable. Elections are part of that, but, you know, we lost in this country for a long time a sense of shame politically, and it was just like, okay, we're owning the libs. We're causing a ruckus. We're trolling effectively. We've got to change the way society looks at that kind of political behavior. It's a long road, Hari.
What does Joe Biden have to do?
Fix COVID. Honest answer. That's the number one thing Joe Biden has to do. He doesn't have to do the Green New Deal or gun control or anything else. He has to fix COVID. His administration, the fate of his administration will be decided in the first 18 to 24 months if he gets the vaccination program in place and gets the economy on track. He will be considered one of the greatest of our presidents, because the death toll is rising and will continue to rise. It's the biggest possible issue. If he does that, people will see that government can be competent and sane and honorable and decent, and doesn't have to be a performance art reality TV show every day.
But look, fixing COVID would be great in a vacuum, but
sure.
What is the potential for him having to deal with rising domestic terrorism?
It's
from
enormous.
People who just don't actually find him to be the legitimate president.
It's enormous. It's enormous. And I will tell you, there are two people who need to be held accountable if that domestic terrorism continues to rise. Rupert Murdoch, whose network is the wellspring of all the misinformation in the universe, and Mark Zuckerberg, whose platform amplifies it and tells Donald Trump supporters that there's a conspiracy against them, that the election is fake, that Joe Biden isn't legitimate, that violence is a political option. Those two people have a vast influence on the political culture of this country on the right that cannot be overestimated.
Should the Attorney General, if he's confirmed Merrick Garland, go after Donald Trump?
Absolutely. Absolutely. He encouraged sedition. He encouraged sedition. He has attempted to overthrow the results of a legitimate American election. And look, Donald Trump's life is about to become a burning hell, a misery of unparalleled scope, because the New York Attorney General is going to go after him on tax fraud and bank fraud. He is never going to escape court for the rest of his life. And it is important, I think, as a message from the Attorney General that everyone is accountable, that everyone is under the law. Donald Trump had an Attorney General in Bill Barr for 2 years who said that he was above the law and immune to any sort of accountability. I think it would be important in this world to see Merrick Garland or whoever becomes the Attorney General pursue charges against Trump and his administration and to pursue things that aren't just about this particular incident this week. There's been an endemic corruption in this administration. There's been influence peddling. There's been cash for pardons. All these things need to be looked into. And Congress has a role to play as well. I mean, when four Americans were killed in Benghazi, we had hundreds and hundreds of hours of hearings in Congress. Well, five Americans just died on the Capitol. I think it's incumbent upon us to go through this, tear it apart, tease it out, find out what's underneath it, get to the truth, and hold people accountable.
Rick Wilson of the Lincoln Project, thanks so much.
Thanks, Ari.
These are my websites, historyreview.com, africancrisis.info, and white-shop.biz. This is my attempt to try and do some Jew-free trading and experimenting with the next level of stuff. So, thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.